Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to be talking about the Kingdom of God. I'm getting little notices here on my switchboard. Okay, well, telling me all kinds of stuff it didn't used to tell me. But anyway, so everything was changing. They evidently had a little bit of trouble getting into the program today, but we're in, and by the skin of our teeth. So what we were going to talk about is finishing up with Hosea. We probably won't get to the end of it. I don't know, we might. But I got to Hosea 12 this morning, and we were going through that a little bit at a time. We actually started reviewing 9, 10, and 11. And so now we're in Hosea 12, a minor prophet. And it starts off, Ephraim feedeth on wind and followeth after the east wind. He daily increaseth lies and desolations, and they do make a covenant with the Assyrians, and oil is carried into Egypt. Now, what is he talking about? Of course, if you don't know that the Assyrians are not really the Assyrians, but actually the Assyrus, like the Canaanites, they are the merchants of men, and we've talked about that. And what are they doing? They're carrying oil into Egypt. What does Egypt mean? It means bondage, the bondage of Egypt. And who is Ephraim? Ephraim is the part of the tribe of Israel that went off and said, what is David to us? But he's also talking, he uses the word Ephraim and Israel almost interchangeably. And maybe when we get to the end of this, we will talk a little bit more about that. But it's not, Ephraim is not 100% Israel, and Israel is not 100% Ephraim. It has to do with the inheritance that Ephraim had, that he inherited certain characteristics. So in verse 2, they talk about the Lord hath also a controversy with Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways, according to his doings, while he recompense him. So Jacob, who is Jacob? Jacob, of course, is the descendant of Abraham, and was going to be known as part of this tribe of Abraham. There was Esau and Jacob, and before that, Isaiah, and there was going to be this great tribe, great people, numbered as the sands of the seas, and coming down. So theoretically, Esau is also a descendant of Abraham, and it talks about the faith of Abraham. The seed of Abraham is the faith of Abraham. We see that in the New Testament. So Abraham was doing what? Was he setting up a city-state and getting everybody to sign up as members and then compelling taxes like Nimrod did in Babylon to provide welfare for the people, provide protection for the people, to save the people from the difficulties of life on this earth, where thieves and robbers might come and where tyrants and other kings might come and try to invade and take over your community. I mean, if you had a small village of 100 people, 300, 400, 500 people could come from another area and just pillage your town, all, steal your daughters, move into your houses. What could you do to stop them? You're only 100 and they're 500, and they can pick the time they're going to attack. So this is always a fear. So you might have your little village, but they would have a nation of people around you, and they would come to your aid if 500 guys tried to kill you, tried to take your house, tried to take your town, tried to take your village and conquer you. And this is what Israel was doing when it went out in the deserts and in the wilderness from Egypt. There was Amalekites and Amalek, and they were all around them, and they could attack them. And they weren't going to get any help from Egypt. As a matter of fact, Egypt was actually threatening to conquer them as foreigners as well when they were down there on the shores of the Red Sea. And God intervened. But now they were out there in the desert, and, you know, Amalek could, you got your grays, your cows, your sheep are grazing in the mountains and going up into the high mountains in the middle of the hot summer and down in the valleys during the winter. And you might be following them with 10, 20 people, 30 people. But what if, you know, 50, 60, 100 Amalek snuck up and ambushed you when you weren't ready, or when you were down at the well, they ran up and killed you, and then your family was all in danger. So they had a way of binding the people together so that if you messed with an Israelite, they'd soon, you know, and he got to blow his shofar, and it was heard by somebody else grazing their flocks way off, maybe a mile away, 2 miles away. We were just out on the desert before we came in here, and we could hear gunshots from way off in the distance. It almost sounded like they were right there on the property, but because of the wind and the day, it was traveling probably several miles, and we could hear those gunshots because it's hunting season out here on the desert. But in those days, you would blow your shofar, and everybody would drop what they were doing, like the Minutemen of early America, and they would come to make sure you were okay. And if somebody had killed you, they would hunt them down. They would track them down. And because thou shalt not kill, if they kidnapped your family, they would hunt them down and free your family, just like Abraham did when Lot was captured by these kings. They were going in and conquering one city-state after another. They evidently had an army that could scale the walls of a city-state and come in and conquer them and go through their houses and steal their gold and threaten to kill them if they didn't give them gold, much as the Germans did and the Jutes did to the Romans when they came in and conquered the Roman city-state way back before Julius Caesar. And they demanded that you pay a ransom or they weren't going to leave you alone. They were going to burn the city to the ground. So people brought gold forth out of their houses and they put them on the scales. And they had to match the weight of the king of the Jutes. And this is what was going on in those days. We could talk about at the time of Christ wasn't much different. There'd be some leader. He would get 1,000 men, 2,000, 3,000 men to follow him, maybe 10,000 men to follow him. And they would come into an area and they would just conquer it and take what they wanted. And what could you do about it? Well, what did the Israelites do about it? What did most of the city-states do about it? Well, they created a city-state. Some built walls around their city-states. And some said, we are our walls. We will hear and protect one another. Some took all their gold and wealth and put it into like a golden statue of Artemis or of a golden calf. And so if you fled across the desert, your wealth was still there in the golden calf. And you had to leave that behind. And so people would stay and fight to protect the wealth. And amongst themselves, they used some other medium of exchange. And that's why God said, no, you don't want a golden calf. You want loyalty based on love for one another. Put your gold away in your own purse and use it wisely to help one another and create those bonds of society that will stay with you even when you face almost certain death, your friends and neighbors will not abandon you because they are honorable people. Well, this is what the Israelites were learning how to do. And so if you attack the Israelites, if you're a Amalekite or Amalek or even an Egyptian, they would come and avenge you. They would go and find the guys and free your family and free your things and take them back to your other members of your family because they believed in capitalism. Yep, capitalism, natural capitalism. And people talk about primitive communism, and they write about that. We've written about it, too, and it's nonsense. There was no primitive communism. There's no way to have primitive communism. There was primitive sharing. You would share what you hunted and you got so that nobody starved in the village. But it wasn't communism. It was philanthropy. It was people caring about one another and would share what they got. And everybody would know that you were the mighty hunter who got this. I talk about the Eskimos. They would do this. All the men would go out hunting every day. They would go out and chop a hole in the ice, and they'd put a hook down there and see if they could catch a fish or a seal or something to bring back the feed to everybody. And some guys never caught anything, almost never caught anything. They would go out. They would hunt, but they wouldn't catch anything. But then someday they might catch something, and you didn't catch anything. But I can guarantee you the guy who was the best hunter, the guy who brought in the most game, the most food, he had the softest moccasins. They made sure he did not freeze. They protected him. He was of value to them. And I can bet you, bottom dollar, he didn't suffer from depression. Because he took care, because people took care of him, and he took care of people, and he felt the sense of accomplishment. This is what it was like in primitive societies, and I use the Eskimos because they lived in such a harsh environment. But it was the same way with the Israelites. When they gathered at the foot of one mountain, and you can still go and see today where they made corrals out of stone, big stone. They piled them up. Well, that wasn't one little sheep herder piling up these stones, and these corrals actually could hold cattle. And you could see that they could move those cattle down the chutes. And they camped there for some time, and they ate meat. They ate a feast because men who were cattlemen shared their meat with everybody. And everybody came to the aid. If somebody rustled one of their cows, one of those Amaleks or Amalekites, they came to protect that man's private property. People said, you cannot have capitalism without the government. One person actually wrote, who would make out the deed? Well, I can make out the deed. I can write it down. This is my property. This is from this meat bound to that meat bound, I can say these are my cattle. I can put a brand on them and say they're my cattle. But can I protect them from Amaleks and Amalekites and other thieves and robbers that wander the deserts? Well, that's what the Israelites did. They respected private property. This is one of the things of Jubilee. Return every man to his family and every man to his possessions. And they did it without a central government, without a king, without a prime minister, without a president, without a legislature. They had a Sanhedrin, but as we've talked before, if you go look on our articles about Sanhedrin, Sanhedrin was not a legislature. It did not make laws. The laws were already made, Ten Commandments. Even the statutes of Moses are just trying to explain to you how the Ten Commandments apply in everyday life. They're not new laws. They weren't.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver. I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.